Bring James Hamm in here. Hammer, what do you think about what we're seeing from Golden State so far? 4-1, Buddy playing really well. I was going to say a couple games. Definitely won a game without Steph Curry. Two? They did win two.
Yeah, they won last night or Wednesday.
Yeah, it was the night before. Yeah. You buying?
No, not really. I mean, like, look, I think Steve Kerr is an excellent coach, and I think he's doing the best
Jason
he can.
Jason Tatum would disagree.
What's that?
Jason Tatum would disagree.
Well.
And the Tatum family.
And four rings would disagree with Jason Tatum. Like, you know, and a couple of gold medals, right? So, like, look, I think at the end of the day, if you're going to go out there and run 10 guys or 12 guys and do the old Hubie Brown, like, mantra of everybody plays, it works for a little while. But at the end of the day, you have to pare down your rotation. You have to, like, that's how basketball typically works. And, you know, I just don't know that it's going to be sustainable for 82 games. And then even if it is, you get into the playoffs and the playoffs are different. I don't think it's sustainable there either. And so I don't know. For right now, it's fine to buy what they're doing. And, you know, are they the best team in the Western Conference? Absolutely not. They are a team that does not have the talent to really carry all the way through and to win 50 games or 55 games. But for right now, like, why not? They're still in some wins, and, you know, that's what's, if you're going to miss the playoffs by four or five games like the Kings did last year, or two games last year, you can steal some games early in the season. Why not?
I'll the reverse course a little bit, and I'll ask you the same question about Phoenix. Like, how do you feel about them? They're 4-1 and looking like maybe they found something here, getting Tyus Jones in there and running the point. Budenholzer is the coach. Do you think they're legit?
Yeah, I think Phoenix has always been legit. You know, I really like, you know, the smaller pickups that they did this year, that, like you said, Trey Jones and Mason Plumlee, like, they just added veteran pieces. I felt like last year they walked into the season and everybody applauded their moves, their bench moves, after they did their, you know, the big trade for Bradley Beal. And I didn't see it at all. And then once the season started, it didn't look good at all. And once you got past the main core guys, they were a hot mess. I don't feel that way with this team anymore. You know, like, Eric Gordon doesn't have to play 25 minutes for them this year. And he's not on that team anymore, but they had to play him major minutes last year because that's who they were. They weren't good enough from top to bottom. And I feel like they're a much more well-rounded team after their top-tier guys.
Okay, so let's put all of that aside and get to the Sacramento Kings, who play Atlanta tonight. Obviously, based on everything you just said, you've got the Kings at the one seed by the end of next weekend, yeah?
Sure.
Well, it actually is kind of possible, right? And I meant that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but they've got Atlanta tonight, Atlanta's not very good. They got Toronto, who's not very good, and they're without their best player. They got Miami. That's the toughest game of the road trip, and then they come back. They got Toronto again. I think the Clippers are on Friday night. But the schedule has set up in a way where the Sacramento Kings have an opportunity, and I think we saw it, Ham, over the first game of the road trip and certainly the last one at home against Portland, that they can find their way with these teams, perhaps in a better way than they could have last year or even the year before. They can find their way against these teams in – you know, despite the runs that each of those teams had, they were able to pull away and make it a comfortable victory and an easy minute management situation for Mike Brown.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is that moment where it's so early in the season, but still, like, who are you? Like, are you a team that takes every game serious? Are you a team that doesn't overlook bad teams? Because last year they didn't. They weren't that team. They overlooked bad teams all the time. And again, they missed the playoffs because of it. You know, the year before, I didn't feel like that's who they were. I felt like that they're a resilient team that beat, you know, all of the bad teams that they were supposed to beat and hung in and maybe, you know, 50-50 against the teams that, you know, maybe they weren't supposed to beat. And that's kind of the way you have to win at the NBA level. There are a bunch of bad teams. You have to take care of business against those teams. And then against the best that the league has to offer, you gotta put it all out there. I mean, look at how many of the Western Conference big name teams the Kings had a plus 500 record on last season, or a 500 record. I mean, you're talking Denver, New Orleans. I mean, not New Orleans. LA. OKC, you're 50-50. But LA, they're 4-0. The other LA, they're 3-1. You know, Minnesota, they're 2-1. Just up and down. I think Phoenix, they were either 2-2 or 3-1. Like all of those teams, they were really good against. You can't have all of those tough victories and then just give them away to bad teams like the Memphis. I mean, the why am I drawing a blank? Detroit and Charlotte, Washington. And all those to Washington, all those games that they did last year. So far, what we've seen is they lost to the two good teams. And whether those teams are going to be good at the end of the year doesn't matter. They're still playoff teams last year. And you lost by a total of 6 points. But then you play the bad teams and you take care of business. They need to take care of business against Atlanta tonight, which is not a good team. The travel to Toronto is going to be brutal. They're going to get in the middle of the night. They're going to have to go through customs. I don't care. That's not a good Toronto Raptors team. Toronto's playing on the second night of a back-to-back. And if you can go 3-0 to start the road trip, and then you've got that game against Miami, you're going to be extra motivated to take down Miami. Mm-hmm. And so that's what a good team would do in this situation. And again, that game against Miami, 50-50 split, you know, who knows what will happen? Maybe a coin flip game, maybe a little bit better than a coin flip game. But if you can come back 4-0 with a 5-game win streak, now you're cooking. Now we're not worried about, you know, who's starting at the two or who's in the rotation and who's not. It doesn't matter. Like whatever buttons you're pushing are working and you're above 500 and you're motoring through. If they don't take care of business and they fall apart against some bad teams, then we're going to sit here and keep wondering who this team is. This was an opportunity for the Kings to get it rolling early in the season, let their rotation build chemistry and sort of get on the same page while you're playing lesser, you know, opponents. And you have this opportunity here. And, you know, if you don't take advantage of it, we'll look back at this at the end of the season and say, okay, well, there's a win that you could have got or you should have got, and they didn't.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ham. I spoke about it earlier, and me and Damien spoke about it earlier. I want to see them get focused and get greedy in these next two games. Usually, you know, I'm the type of usually don't say sweep anything, right? Like just, oh man, on this road trip, go 3-1, or you know, in these two games, win one of these two, and yada, yada yada. Not this time. Not here. Get greedy. Win both games. It's going to take a level of focus because you talk about, you know, if you're able to beat Atlanta, which you got to stay focused in that game. The back to back going to Toronto and customs and the flight and getting ready. It's going to take a level of focus. But that's what I want to see this team have in this situation. I want to see them bear down, take on two teams that, at the very least, don't have as talented of a roster as you, and win both of those games and set yourself up for Monday for the final trip of this final game of this road trip. I want that in a major way this weekend from those guys. I want to see them win both of these games.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and if we're looking at Monday and we're talking, you know, sweep the road trip, go 4-0 on the road trip, that's where I think you get greedy. Right now, like, they should win these games, but that doesn't mean they will. And you know, like, you're going up against Atlanta tonight. No Bogdanovich, no Dyson Daniels. You know, they're missing other players. Who else are they missing? Andre Hunter. Andre Hunter's out as well. Like, this team is shorthanded. You need to go in there and beat up on these guys. You go up against Toronto, man, Toronto doesn't have Scotty Barnes. Their best player is out. So there's no excuses. You need to go in there and you need to rough them up. Don't leave people open from three like you have all season, but rough them up and move on to the next game. Now, if they do lose against Toronto and we're watching and midway through the third quarter, it looks like somebody hit them in the head with a shovel, that's when we're going to go, okay, that's what fatigue, that's what staying up all night long going through customs looks like. And those things happen on occasion, but still, that's not a great team, and they should be all over the Raptors. And then that would really set you up. And I get, if we get to Monday that's when I think we really talk about getting greedy and saying, hey, how about 4-0? How about a 5-game win streak? And then you come back, you got Toronto again. How about a 6-game win streak? And now all of a sudden you are near the top of the Western Conference.
Now you're talking about beating the best team on the schedule too, mm-hmm. in the Miami Heat. Like that's the final game of the road trip. That's going to be the toughest one. We're doing a lot of hypotheticals here. Let's stick with the one Casey and I were talking about a second ago. Your boy over at The Athletic, he's our friend over at The Athletic. We're just not allowed to acknowledge it publicly or he'll get in trouble.
True.
Him and Hollinger did a write-up about stars to watch in the trade market. And Kuminga was in there. Benedict Mathurin was in there. And Keegan Murray was in there. And the idea was, if this thing falls flat this year, they don't take the step that they desire or maybe miss the postseason altogether, that Keegan could wind up being the guy that the front office looks at to move. Do you agree with that idea?
Who was that writing with Hollinger?
It was Sam.
Oh.
We're not allowed to. I don't want Sam to get in trouble. I don't want anyone to know that we're friends with Sam Amick.
Oh, okay. Got it.
There could be some people who get upset.
Yeah. All friends with Sam Amick.
Yes, secretly.
Secretly. Okay.
Don't tell anyone else because
I won't. I'll
don't want
make
him to get
sure
a stern
that it's
talking
a secret to. Yep. That we are friends with Sam Amick.
Correct.
Okay.
And like, please don't mention that we talk at home games. That could be disastrous.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
for
whoa, whoa, whoa. Chill, chill,
I'm
chill,
just
chill,
saying.
Chill.
I just want.
Man, chill. Now you're just pushing buttons. You're just like potentially getting someone in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Why? Like, that's the first question. If you don't.
But why now was my first question.
Yeah.
Why now versus the last three times you had the opportunity to do it?
Yeah, so my point would be right here. Keegan Murray would probably be the last guy you would trade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't he the young guy? Now, like, look, if someone's coming at you with a superstar level player and wants to make some move and they're requiring that Keegan Murray's part of that deal, you know, there is no untouchable player in the NBA. There never has been. And so, sure. Like, maybe that's, you know, one thing, but like, that doesn't make any sense. If you fail with a team that's age 26 through 28 with one 35-year-old guy, and then you have one or two players that are under the age of 24, why would you give up one of them that's already proven to be one of the better two-way players? Again, I always made this argument with Harrison Barnes, and it was before the Kings started adding major pieces. Like, everyone always said, oh, Danny Ainge wants Harrison Barnes in Boston. Like, the Kings at that point, they didn't need to trade Harrison Barnes. They needed like two more Harrison Barnes. Like, that's what they needed. The Kings right now, why would you trade Keegan Murray? You need another Keegan Murray. You know, go get Chris. Don't go get Chris, but you know what I'm saying? You need another Keegan Murray to make this team like whole. And that's sort of the piece we're talking about. The 6'8", 6'9" guy who can play multiple positions, who plays defense, who hits 3-point shots. Okay. Mm-hmm. So why would you trade your 23-year-old version of that when you have team control of him, not just this year, but next year. And then chances are next summer, he signs a 5-year extension and you have him for another, I mean, you have them wrapped up for 8 years or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
total.
Yeah, the other aspect of that is the guy that you're talking about, what I don't believe will require you to trade Keegan Murray. So you'd be overselling at that point. And I'm thinking of a guy like Cam Johnson or Finney Smith. Like, you don't need to trade Keegan Murray to get one of those two guys.
No. That's where you use your draft capital. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, you're going to have to match salaries and stuff. It's like we always talk about, we pontificate about the superstar that is Bobby Portis. But like, the only reason you're giving up a first round pick for Bobby Portis is because why else would Milwaukee trade him? Mm-hmm. Right. So you're going to have to match salaries. But his salary is like $13 million. Cam Johnson, 20 something million bucks. Like, his salary is like, yeah, would it cost you something? Sure. But you can probably piece it together And you can also see how the Kings might not want to trade for a $25 to $30 million player at this point, because if Kevin Huerter is your starting shooting guard, that means that Kevin Huerter has to go. Like, there isn't a lot of ways salary-wise to get up to a $30 million player. The easiest path is, again, a $17 million Kevin Huerter and $8 million Trey Lyles. That's $25 million. Throw in Colby Jones, that's $27 million, and you can go up to like $33 million in trade value. So you got what I'm saying? Like, there is – the Kings, to me, at this point, they're more at, hey, how do we get that 7, 8, 9 player that gives us what we don't have right now? How do we get that player? Not how do we get a 1 through 6 player? Because I think their 1 through 6 is really, really solid at this point. And that is like, how do you get that extra piece? And again, to go out and get a $35 million player means at least 2 of your top 7 players are gone. And that's not because you have to trade them, because that's what the value of a trade would be. It's because that's what the NBA salary cap rules would force you to do. There's no way to get around it.
I don't know why. It's just really funny watching Leezy just walk around the office. Like, I forget Leezy works here. He's just going over to the kitchen, getting a little snack, going back to his little workspace. Like, what is Leezy just pacing by these windows for?
Shout out Leezy. Yeah.
My boy Leezy, man. See, hey, hard work pays off.
I was wondering why you were smiling.
It's like, I'm just happy to see my guy here, man. It's cool. He's wanted to work here so badly since I've known him, and now he's just hanging out.
Living the dream.
Talking to Ken Anthony. We might never get him back.
Oh, no. Ken Anthony. There's a couple of guys you walk through that hallway.
Yeah, there's a couple times. I got to take this call, man.
Ken got the smoothest delivery in all of Sacramento.
He does.
But, when he wants to talk sports, you better talk sports with my man Ken Anthony.
And he loves talking sports, too.
Oh, he does.
The old beer commercial where you sit down at the bar next to the guy. How you doing? I'm good. How are you doing? And it's like, oh, there goes my afternoon. Yeah. There's a couple of them.
I also see him over there talking to the pocket watching champion of the world.
The what?
The pocket watching champion of
the
world.
That's not what he is.
Abe is right there.
He's not the
Abe is there?
The pocket watching champion of the world. He's right there at the
We can play right now. We can play right now. It don't matter.
Oh, you're getting distracted. Don't matter. Let's talk. I know people are already confused. It's 2:19, and James Hamm is on with us. He's got a big weekend ahead. We got Kings basketball coming up at 4:30. We had to talk to him a little bit early. And James, with 4 games in the books here, what stands out to you most that you don't like about the way the Kings have played the first 4 games, or is there something?
I don't know. To be honest with you, like, most of the bad is just part of like the reality of not having your pieces together during training camp. Like, that's what I've seen, sort of the clunkiness here and there. I still think that they're trying to figure out how to not force shots in like crucial moments. And it helps that you play a couple of teams where you don't have any crucial moments. You just have to go out there and play. Mm-hmm. But again, that's going to like rear its ugly head again. You got to figure out that whole deal with like who's going to be the fourth quarter scorer, and when do you force up a jump shot, and when do you pass it and look for the open man. But that's just like guys getting to know each other. I think defensively they've been much better than people thought, especially like early on. If you look at someone in the chatty house mentioned how the Warriors have all these deflections. Like, the Kings have a ton of deflections too. Like, the defensive scheme that Luke Laux has introduced, the subtle changes that he's made, I think are reaping like huge rewards right now. And if you wonder what some of those are, when a guy is dribbling at the top, you'll see not the guy that's guarding him, but the guy, you know, the other guy up top, who's hedging in between guarding his man and putting his hand in the passing lane the whole time. And that has led to so many steals and deflections early on for this team. It's sort of a weird way to help, and to sort of push towards the guy with the ball the whole time. And so I think that that's been huge. Like at SAC Film Room does a great job of breaking down film. And it's even something like that they may mention, but they don't know that that is like a point of emphasis for this Kings roster. Just sort of the way that they're hedging towards people. And like, look, I think that there's a lot to like what's happening. And overall, I guess the one thing is the rebounding is going to be a problem. And the fact that Sabonis, who leads the league in rebounding the last like 3 years, isn't rebounding particularly well right now, and neither is anyone else on that team, that's a bit of a problem. But I think most of the things that we're seeing are fixable.
Do you feel like what they're doing on the defensive end is who they are? Like, this is the type of defense that they can play all year long, and the type of performance that they could have on the defensive end on a night in and night out basis? I do,
yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, I think so, because what they're doing is they're really focused on helping. Like, it's a help defense situation. And I think it also, it ties everyone together. When it's almost like the buddy system, right? You take your kids on a field trip and everyone's got a buddy, and that you're doing that so no one is left behind and no one gets lost, right? And I feel like a lot of times when the Kings are at their worst is somebody gets a player in isolation and everybody just like kind of backs away and lets somebody get roasted. You know, we shouldn't see again, Steph Curry going around Keegan Murray and getting to the basket like during the playoffs. Somebody else should have stopped and it like should have helped along the way, so it's not always ISO. And I think what we're seeing is a little bit of a buddy system from this team, where there's always somebody else reaching and swatting at the ball as somebody dribbles by or as somebody goes to make a pass. There's always someone with a hand in the passing lane. And that's why we're seeing just a huge amount of deflections from this team.
Are deflections a good measure of what they're doing defensively?
Yes, they're huge. Yeah. I'd even tell you, like, I say this all the time, like blocks are fine. And a guy that defends the basket is always good to have one of those guys, right? But blocks are not a true turnover. And I feel like every time the Kings get a block this season, the other team gets a rebound and either puts it back in, or they kick it out to a guy for a wide open three and he hits it. So like, blocks are never a good stat for me. They're not, you know, again, it's okay to have a guy who gets blocks and it shows that you are like at least trying on defense. But I want steals, I want deflections. And what deflections do, number one, they lead to steals, but the other thing they do is they disrupt the flow of somebody else's offense. So that offense is always like stopping to grab the ball, or, you know, having to, you know, if you say there's a guy who's wide open on the perimeter and you go to fire it to him on a kickout pass, but somebody gets a hand on it, then the pass isn't a perfect pass. It's not in the pocket for that guy to just line up and shoot. And that's what I'm seeing from the Kings a lot. It's like these little tiny things that make a huge difference at the end of the day. And like, well, we saw one game where DeRozan had like 6 deflections and Herter had 5 deflections, and you just go down the list and everybody's got deflections. That's huge. You know, if you can't block shots, you should be, every time a big man brings the ball down low at all, you should be swatting at it. And that's, we've seen that from the Kings nonstop. We've seen it from Keon Ellis mixing it up in the middle. We've seen from Domas, like, not always just going up with a hand, but actually trying to knock the ball away before it gets there. So lots of good things on the defensive end.
And I think you're seeing it, at least in the last few games, from the two guys that played two guard, I guess. I mean, Malik Monk is there too, but I'm thinking of Kevin Herter and Keon Ellis. What they did on, what was that, Tuesday night against Utah. Oh, man, it was unbelievably impactful on the defensive end, in my opinion. Just being disruptive all over the place, just having active hands. Keon Ellis reminding you, in case anybody forgot, yeah, I need to be in the rotation, period. Like, these are the things that I can do. And those are things, like we just talked about, like I just asked you, though, I think they're things that can stay all years long. I think Kevin Herter, he's not this great one-on-one defender but he understands team defense. He understands help defense. He understands passing lanes. He can, even after being in the league long enough, understand where the next pass may go. And that's one of the reasons why he's able to get the deflections. And then Keon, just individually, the individual defensive talent he has, incorporating that into a team setting. I think those two can be pretty good on the defensive end all year long.
Yeah, are we going to break, or do you want me to hit on
no,
that?
No, you can keep going. Yeah, we're going to go till 43.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And then, we'll let you go. Does that work?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever you guys want to do.
Okay, yeah, we're good.
I would say this. Like, I tried to make this point early on, and I think people were just, like, super upset about the Keon Ellis thing, you know, him not playing. That Kevin Herter is an experienced player that knows how to play the game. He understands. He is not a horrible defender. He, again, started next to Trey Young for 4 years and was the guy who had to pick up the toughest guy because Trey Young doesn't guard anybody. And so we get to this point where he's on the court and he's starting to get into shape, and you're starting, I don't even think Kevin's doing anything he wasn't doing before. He's just in the right frame of mind. When you're a shooter and the shot's not going, it impacts everything that you do. And I think what we have done here, is we forgot how good Kevin Herter was 2 years ago. And it wasn't just he was a good three-point shooter, and he averaged like 15.3 points per game and third on the team in scoring. He was a good ball player. You know, he passed the ball well. He had nights where he had 9 rebounds when you needed it. And so now we're sort of getting a fresh look at Kevin, and he looks like he's in the right mental space to be successful. And however Mike has got him there, and however Kevin has got himself there, and whoever they have working with him, I don't care about the process. All I see is the result is he's back to looking like the player he was a couple of years ago. And that's huge for this team. And that's not to take anything away from Keon Ellis. You talked about Keon there to open this. Like, I think Keon had his check-in game last game. I do. Like, all of a sudden, Keon Ellis looked like Keon Ellis. Mm-hmm. You know, he had the play where he stripped the ball from behind. He poked it out. It hit Trey Lyles, and it bounced back to him. He got the ball, fired it ahead, full court, to De'Aaron Fox, who went in for a layup. He bricks a layup, and Keon Ellis flies in out of nowhere with a two-handed dunk. Couple of things. Number one, he did not look like that player at all a week ago or 2 weeks ago during preseason. Secondly, he didn't have that bounce then either. And so whatever he's done to get himself right, and it's not easy for him to get right because he's the one who just got lost his starting job and then got bumped out of the rotation out of nowhere. So his recovery to me is just as impressive as Kevin Herter recovering from 7 months worth of surgery. Like, it's a big deal for Keon to find himself, because all of a sudden the Kings have a 7-man rotation. And if you can get Trey Lyles to get back to who he is, then all of a sudden you have the 8-man rotation. And if you want to add in a half of a, you know, Alex Len for a little bit, that's a big step too. But we're getting closer and closer to this team looking whole. And that's why I think this early, grouping of games that aren't against top tier opponents is so crucial for the Kings. Get the ball rolling, find yourself, start to build some chemistry. So when you do play the Phoenix Suns, you know, 2 weeks from now or a week and a half from now, whatever it is, you're ready. You're mentally locked in and you're building something and you're starting to get some momentum. And I think this little grouping of games is huge for the Kings.
I think we were critical of some of the things Keon did in preseason and summer league as well. And there could be a component to where, you know, because you just said something kind of clicked. It wasn't your exact phrasing, but something kind of clicked for Keon, and he looked different in the last game. And maybe it was just him finding his groove with these guys who are good, you know, significantly better basketball players than who he was playing with before. Like, not every guy can stand out on the court. Not every guy can make another G League guy look great. Maybe Keon's just a guy who kind of finds his role with players who are really good, and that helps elevate his game a little bit. And as you said, Hammer, it gives him that little bounce that he might not have had before.
Yeah, I mean, he had the perfect stat line for me. What was it, like 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks? If that's who Keon Ellis is, man, he plays 15 to 20 minutes every night. Like, go out and do all the dirty work. Just, you know, bring what you can bring to the table. You don't need to do more. You just need to bring that energy. And like you saw, as soon as he started moving around the court, everyone else started playing off of that. He has an ability to bring a super high level of energy that everybody feeds off of. But he didn't through the preseason. And that's what I mean by, maybe he thought he needed to be something different with the starters. Maybe that's what it was. He thought, oh, they need me to hit, you know, to shoot six or seven threes a game. And I've got to be this elite 3-point shooter. And that's how I'm going to earn my time here. And that wasn't it. The way he's supposed to earn minutes for this team is to just play with reckless abandon and be really, really active. Change the level of activity on the court in the same way that Malik Monk changes the activity level on the offensive end. And yeah, I think like, again, you don't want to leave any of these guys behind. That's the key. This team is built with, you know, some really nice top end stars, but then a whole bunch of really good NBA players, smart players that should understand their role and play to their strengths, but you need all of them. This is, you know, again, that's how the Boston Celtics didn't win a title because, well, I mean, they have superstars at almost every position, but look at the depth of that team. And let's be honest, there are better players in the league than Jaylen Brown. There are better players in the league than Jason Tatum. They're elite, but there is a level above them than Kristaps Porzingis and even Drew Holiday. But the whole grouping of them raise each other up. And that's how I kind of feel like the Kings are built. They're built where it's not on one guy or two guys to lead the whole thing. It's on a group of players to all do their part to make the team better.
Man, you know what?
Maybe four or five better than the players in the league better than Tatum.
Nah, man, come on, man. Tatum.
There might be more than that.
I don't know.
Jokic?
Fine.
Check.
Yeah. Fine.
Okay. Giannis? Check.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Embiid when healthy?
Well, check. Don't give me the. Well, all right.
LeBron James still? Shea? Like there are players.
I don't know.
Luka?
I don't know if I just say about Shea. Luka. I wouldn't just say Shea just recklessly like that. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I give you Luka. I have five.
I think I just learned James hates Jason Tatum. What Jason Tatum do to you?
I think Jason Tatum is a very, very, very good player. But
Steph Curry better than Jason Tatum today? Is that what you said?
Well, I mean, like maybe not today.
Well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about today. I'm not talking about his career.
Yes.
No, that's fine. No, you're absolutely right. Steph, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Tatum's going to get some people's attention this year. The people who aren't paying attention to Tatum, he's going to get their attention this year.
Yeah, I didn't even afro in the chat.
I love when you say that, and I can't explain why. It's always funny.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, there are players that you would take above Tatum, and sure, that's a great, but the key to the Boston Celtics is they play defense together, they take turns scoring, they are a true team, and they are so deep, and it's not just deep like 1 through like 12 on the roster, it's the depth, the quality of depth from their starters and from the guys who are playing major minutes. You just feel like everyone there, the Derek Whites of the world, they all know what they're there to do. And that's, I think, the next step for the Kings. When you get everybody playing well, now it's like, okay, let's everyone play to our strengths now. Mm-hmm. And I think we're a little ways away from that. But certainly I think this team is on the right path, even if, you know, they lost two games to start the season.
You know, we talk about Keon a little bit too. The other thing that I feel might've happened a little bit is, to a certain degree, and maybe it was just internally, Keon got a little pissed off and said, you're not going to even think about, should I be in this rotation? I'm about to show you. Like, I understand the urgency of what's going on if I want to be in the rotation, and I'm going to show up. And to, like, James's point, talk about check in. I think Keon, no, I'm here. I'm here, Mike. Mm-hmm. Like, let's figure this out because I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I against Portland, he did a good job of that, but I thought that was He turned it all the way up against Utah. I thought he was so good on the defensive end in that game on Tuesday. And he's doing what every coach wants their players to do. Make it difficult on me. Make me have to make some difficult decisions and, like, really agonize over this and really look at, like, man, I got to make it tough. And that's what Keon's doing right now. He made his statement that, no, I need to be in this rotation permanently.
And that's exactly what he did last year. That's why he's in the rotation now. It's because when he got opportunities in a blowout against the Houston Rockets, he came in and played out of his mind. And, you know, like Mike has talked about this, that even with Isaac Jones, like he keeps, like, Isaac Jones keeps making him say maybe, like maybe. And it's like when your kid comes up and says, hey, can I have a cookie? And you're like, maybe. But you just kind of brush them off. And then they come back and, like, maybe. There's a way in which a player can keep building on who he is and what he's supposed to do and doing the right things, that eventually he makes it so a coach has no option but to say, okay, yes. Like, I'm silly if I don't. Like, I can't get in my own way here. I've got to put you on the court because you've earned that. And that's what Keon did last year. And I think, again, what we saw from him last time out, that's exactly what he has to do. Like, he just earned, like, another five games without any question of being in the rotation full time. It's like, okay, how do you earn that? How do you turn, you know, Mike from a maybe to a yes every single game? And it's on Keon to keep doing the things that earned him that right before.
Hammer, you mentioned Keon having that check-in moment. Has anyone not had a check-in moment for Sacramento yet?
You know, I don't. I mean, you know, we saw the game where Keegan, you know, at what was 6 of 11 from 3. We've seen the game where, again, Domas just crushes people. DeMar DeRozan's at 4 straight games of 20 points or more. Fox had the 127-28 point game. Yep. You know, I don't think so. Like, everybody who stepped on, yeah, I mean, I think Kevin Herter's had multiple moments already this season where you're just like, again, you're just reminded of how good he is. I'd say, like, Trey, and Trey's really frustrated with it too. You can tell. I mean, he had the moment where he ripped his jersey off. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he literally just split his jersey down the middle.
I don't know why.
And
I hate that.
He said that it was because the jersey was too tight.
LeBron.
And I said,
rip the sleeves off. Yeah.
Did they give you the schmedium? And he said, yeah, it was a schmedium. And he's like, it was too tight. And I felt like, and I'm like, it probably wasn't the reason. It was because he knows he's not playing up to what he's used to playing. And it's tough to find your rhythm when you have a lower extremity injury that limits you being on the court and doing anything. Like, it's one thing to just sit there and shoot a bunch of threes from the corner or whatever, but to be able to move and to be active, that's a lot different. I would even say, you know, Kevin has been cleared to shoot and to run and to lift weights and to do all of that stuff for like 2 months, 3 months. So he's been moving and doing all that stuff. It's tough for a guy who, you know, Trey's already a big guy. And when you saw that his body transformation last season, where he came into camp in the best shape of his life, he's a big guy. Like, being in the best shape of your life is difficult for Trey. Like, he has to put in the work on his body all the time. And that's just because he's a naturally, like, big boned, you know, broad shouldered dude. And losing like 6 weeks right before a season is just really, really tough to bounce back and be the same player instantly. So I would say him. I don't think Alex Len has had a particularly great start either. You know, any big time moments so far. But yeah, that's about it.
Trey will probably be easier to get in a groove than someone like Keegan, right? Because his role is a little bit different. His minutes are a little bit more different. So he can have 6 points in a 12-minute outing, and you're like, man, Trey was really effective out there. Versus 6 points from Keegan is like, hey, that ain't going to work, Harrison. You got to do better than that. That was uncalled for. I apologize. I'm sorry. That's bad.
Shots
host.
Fired. Shots
That's
fired.
Bad host. HB's my man. But it's probably easier for Trey, right? Or he doesn't need like a big, massive outing. He just needs to have a couple of moments in his short minutes.
No, I totally get what you're saying. But when you go 1 of 6 from the field, and just nothing feels like it's right. And you know, I think he did a good job rebounding last game. I think he had 7 rebounds, right? And they put him at center. Like this team, they need him to play center. Look at how different they are when you force the opposition to drag a center away from the rim and go defend Trey Lyles on the perimeter. Like that, there is a lot of versatility and a lot of good that Trey Lyles brings to the court. But at the same time, like you need him in a way that you probably need him too much, mm-hmm. right? This team doesn't have somebody to go defend Julius Randle when Keegan steps off the court, or LeBron James when he steps off the court. And the next best option that you have is to give Trey that opportunity. And if he's not right, you know, that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. And if he is 100% right, you're still asking Trey Lyles to go defend, you know, LeBron James or Kevin Durant or, you know, again, Julius Randle. And that's not fair either. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have the other player that you really need to play that. And so I don't know. I think I understand his frustration, because coming back from injury, it looks different for everybody. Mm-hmm. And for him, he's just not getting there yet. And I can only imagine how infuriating it is.
James, go enjoy your weekend. We'll be monitoring your Twitter account as the Kings play. Coming up at 4:30, Eddie Gonzalez joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC, ESPN 1320 on this beautiful Friday afternoon. November 1st. Who would have thought that we'd be here 2 days after New Year's? It's how it feels, at least. New Year's just happened a couple days ago. Here we are at the end of 2024. But yeah, time is moving. Couple of things I wanted to touch on real quick. We're going to talk some basketball. I got my man Eddie Gonzalez pulling up on me in about 13 minutes or so. Jesse, did you see that the A's schedule officially released yesterday?
Yeah, with all like the times and stuff like that. The yeah.
They have 60 night games, I believe it is, 21 day games. And by looking at that schedule, I'm going to look at it again. I think there's legitimately 4 games out of the 81 home games where we're like, it's going to be pretty hot here. Like I said, remember everybody, oh no, the cleats are going to, they're just going to burn. They're just gonna, no, settle down. I'm looking, because obviously every Sunday game is a 1 o'clock game, but like we don't really get hot like that until I wouldn't even say June like that. I would say July and August. And in July, they've got 1 1 o'clock home game. In August, they got quite a few. It's going to be pretty hot. They got 3 1 o'clock home games in August. But that's about it. I don't even think June is that hot. They got 2 1 o'clock home games in June. June is hot. They're not going to go crazy. They're not going to lose their mind in June. But, yeah, watch out. Watch out for those that 1 in July and the 3 in August. But that's about it. Everything else is under them lights. I don't know why they made a big deal about that. Look, I understand the whole artificial turf concerns. I get it all. And there's a reason why they're not doing it anymore, because, you know, Player Association, we ain't doing that. So I get that. But it'll be fine. It'll be more than fine here in Sacramento for however long they're here. It'll be all good.
I don't know. Players are going to go down like Indiana Jones in quicksand, bro.
I haven't seen Indiana Jones.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's crazy or not.
The chatty house will be like, what, KC, what?
Like, Indiana Jones is cool, but.
I ain't seen him. I get the premise. Aren't they like trying to find a treasure and put it back? Or
that's basically it. He's looking for some artifact and whatnot, and they're trying to kill him sometimes. And
Who's trying to kill him?
Just the powers that be, just wherever the bad guys are in whatever country he's in at that time.
I've been on the ride. I think it was at Universal Studios. And isn't that when the
ride is fire.
The boulder, like, chases.
No, that's at Disneyland.
It's Disneyland? Okay.
Yeah, Disneyland is Indiana Jones.
The big old boulder is like chasing you or something like that. Ain't that Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to tell you I'm going to watch Indiana Jones this weekend. I'm not going to do that. But, hey, what's up with your coach, man?
What are you talking about? Joe Mazzulla? Yeah. All right. I hope we're not taking that serious.
All right. We'll break it down because I did take it serious. He said he won more fighting back in the league.
That's not it. All he was trying to combat was just the Kevin O'Condors and stuff like that. The whole let's change the Andy Bailey's. Let's 3-point line. We got to fix it. They're taking too many threes. He was just like, that's absurd. So if you're going to give me this absurd nonsense or whatever, I'm going to give it right back.
Joe Mazzulla, he's starting to get comfortable in this league, boy.
Yeah, he is.
He's starting to get comfortable, and he's getting back at these people. I also saw something the other day where Bob Ryan said the 3-point shot is the worst thing that's ever happened since he's been watching basketball.
No, it's not, Bob Ryan. It's not. It's actually the best thing that's ever happened to basketball. It really is, honestly. We've watched old school basketball, and I'm not going to say anything, but we've watched.
Say it. It's we've Friday. Watched. We're here. Say it.
I don't want to watch dudes passing around, cheer Pistol Pete, take it. Like, that's not it anymore.
I remember when we were in the studio and we watched.
Julius Erving does not play defense. We learned that on D'Lo and KC.
That's facts. We were watching the 1985. I don't know if they played in 85, but it was Lakers Celtics. I think it was 85. And it just looked crazy. It was like, what is this? What, it might have been 84.
I think it was 84 because then we played in 84. It fast forwarded like to 87.
87 looked like a brand new game. It was like, oh, this is the NBA.
The 3-point line is sick, Bob Ryan.
Yeah, that's
Steph against the Thunder, one of the all-time greatest moments ever.
Yeah.
All-time greatest shots.
Yeah. Kyrie Irving with a winning 3-pointer.
Damian Lillard over Russell Westbrook.
Come on. Like, I don't want to do this to Bob Ryan. I really don't because, you know, I want to respect the legend. I want to respect the legend that is Bob Ryan. But when he says things like this, come on, man.
We can all appreciate each other.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm going to ask Eddie some of these questions, too, because I know he watches the league. But I want to ask you as well. The Rockets, Kamara, our guy Kamara has been on the Rockets since April. He's like, nah, they're going to be the truth. They're going to be the truth. They're young and up and coming or whatever. They got a big win last night in Dallas. Jalen Green is looking like Allen Iverson out here. You believe in Houston? You believe in Houston to be a playoff team? However they get there is how they get there, but be a playoff team.
Yeah, I could believe that. Like, just because, like, we saw it at the end of the year, and now they're kind of backing it up a bit. Obviously, more games and stuff like that. But also, the Pelicans stink, too. And Herb Jones is out 2 to 4 weeks. CJ McCollum's out 2 to 3 weeks. So, they're already dealing with that. So, I could see, like, the Rockets moving in and taking the Pelicans' spot.
Yeah, the Pelicans, those two games against the Warriors, that wasn't a good look, man.
That team doesn't work, I don't think. I think it's time to make moves. And I don't blow it up is the right word, but it's time to move on from Ingram and Zion. I don't think that's ever going to work.
So you start with Ingram. You start with Ingram. If you're making a move.
Start with whoever gives me the best deal for whoever's on that team.
So you'd be willing to move Zion right now?
Yeah, I don't think Zion in New Orleans is ever going to work. Hmm. Ever.
You're not wrong.
I think you can keep Zion around and try and rebuild around him again, but you're never going to win a title. Like, that's just not going to work, I don't think.
The crazy thing about it, as I think about it, is, like, what works around Zion? Like, what works? Like, would you want another, Valanciunas-type center? But it feels like he would kind of get in the way of where Zion likes to operate. Is it a stretch five?
What about a Brook Lopez type?
Yeah, maybe a Brook Lopez. We didn't talk about it earlier. That's another move. I don't know if I would have done that if I was Milwaukee. Like, they was really stressing over Brook Lopez. And I understand when he was in the prime of what he was doing, he was a big factor for that team. But I maybe would have let him walk.
They ran it back too many times.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Between Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton, one of them needed to go.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need to re-sign both of those.
It was probably Chris Middleton, too, to be honest.
Probably so. Although, Brooke, I got to really look at that. Brooke don't look. It looks like an old Yeller.
I don't know if we have the old Yeller Brook Lopez. It's Brook Lopez. We can just tell him to retire. Jeez, we don't have the old Yeller Brook Lopez.
Like, Brooke, I think it might be time, man. Just, you know, no,
I don't think Brooke is even good enough to be old Yeller. Like, not even trying to, now you got me disrespect. Not even trying to disrespect
what was,
him.
What was that? Was that in the chat when somebody wanted to. It was a couple weeks ago. I forgot who they were talking about. They're like, "Yeah, we have to take him back out there like one of them dogs." Man, I said, "Oh man,
chill out."
But yeah, man, Brook Lopez. They got a show. Hey, the Bucks and the Pelicans. Now that you're talking about them too, it's almost, I'll use a boxing analogy right here. They got to show me something.
I'm out on the Bucks.
I'm about to stop the. I'm about to out like they're not making the playoffs.
I'm not gonna go that far, but going into the season, I said they could. I can see them not being top six. I feel pretty good about that.
Not top six.
They're not good right now. Damon Giannis doesn't work. Trista talked about it a bit on Tuesday. There's been rumblings and all that. It's just, it's not meshing. And Doc Rivers isn't going to fix that. And the rest of the team is just not good.
So, what do you think is more of the issue, though? The rest of the team or Giannis and Dame not meshing?
I think it's all a collective. It's all like... Like, Dame and Giannis could mesh, but the rest of the team's not. Like I said, you don't have the players or whatever. Doc Rivers is a fine coach, I guess, but he's not. He's whatever at this point. All right. You just don't have enough everywhere.
So for them to not be top six, the two teams that are in the top six right now that I don't think will be there is Chicago and Miami. I don't think Miami's going to finish in the top six.
Indiana's not in there, right?
Indiana's not in there. Milwaukee's not in there. Philly's not in there. I don't think Philly's the top 16. I think Embiid and PG are going to miss too much time.
I don't hate that. I mean, they're not even playing right now, so I can't even fight that.
So I would put Indiana in where Chicago's at, and I think it'll be a three-way tie between or a race between Milwaukee, Miami, and Philly to get the sixth seed. Who do you believe in out of those three? I'm still going Milwaukee.
For the sake of my argument, I guess I'd go Philly.
Go Philly over Miami?
Miami feels like bad vibes. Feels like Jimmy's on his way out.
Mm.
Well, he is on his way
There's
out.
Bad
I think.
Vibes
his
all
year.
Over the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, Miami. Bam hasn't even started the year well at all either. There's just something going on over there. I think.
Okay, I like.
They
this.
Might have it down here.
I like that. We're gonna continue this conversation when we talk to our guy Eddie Gonzalez right after this break, man. We still got more NBA to talk about. We got more NFL to talk about. We closing things up on this Friday on Sacramento's number one sports leader.